This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Lisa Quinn, Executive Director of Feet First, a nonprofit that works to ensure all communities across Washington State are walkable. Lisa Quinn is here today to evaluate public policies for pedestrians at the local, state, and federal level and to tell us about key projects of Feet First. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Feet First?
Sure. So we, as you mentioned, we work across the state to ensure that all communities are walkable. We started out in 2001, and we work on an advocacy level, education, and also creating campaigns to make it easier for people to go by foot.
Before we go into more detail later on, would you give a brief overview of Feet First programs?
Sure. So one of the programs that we work on is Safe Routes to School. So we work in schools designing programs that will help kids get to school. So we do a lot of education and encouragement events. So in this last year, we've been working in 4 schools in Seattle. So we've been working in Dearborn Elementary School, Hawthorne Elementary School, Rocks Hill, and Olympic Hills Elementary School. And then within that, we've been seeing quite a difference in kids getting to school. So in Dearborn Elementary, we've been able to increase the number of kids by 61%. And we've also been doing a lot of volunteer organization, working with partner organizations on Stairway Walks Day. This past February, we were able to increase the number of people going out and looking at their stairways and participating in that. And then we've been developing a neighborhood walking ambassador program, training about 40 neighborhood walking ambassadors to lead over 90 walks this last year. And then we've also coordinated this last year 3 walk and talk events where we work with political leaders, community leaders to go out. And as places are becoming more developed, we identify how they can actually incorporate walking into the conversation.
Let's now look at public policies that affect pedestrians and how they help or hinder those trying to walk. First, how would you characterize the current pedestrian environment in Seattle?
In Seattle, I would say there's parts of Seattle that are really great for walking. We have the downtown core that continuously is getting better. It's great for walking. There are parts, as you probably know, in North Seattle where there's places that are lacking sidewalks and even pockets of Southeast Seattle. And then you have the conditions of speeding in areas where it's been designed for cars to actually speed in particular areas. So that's really not accommodating for people walking. And then you have infrastructure, again, not having sidewalks, but having narrow sidewalks, not having enough lighting that's really scaled for pedestrians. So I guess if I was to give it a grade, we're probably about a B minus, maybe in Seattle, with definitely room for improvement.
What City of Seattle policies are in place to help pedestrians?
In Seattle, we have a pedestrian master plan that will be updated in 2015. And so within that, it identifies projects that are specifically calling out, looking at where the network is and where there's potential demand for people walking. And it looks at that and it identifies and funds projects to make it easier for people to go by foot. So whether that means a connection to a transit stop or to a school, it really tries to identify and concentrate in particular areas that will make it easier for people. And looking at cross-section, so a social equity lens is also placed on that. So making sure where things have been underserved for many, many years, that actually looking at trying to improve those areas. And it also, the Pedestrian Master Plan has a health lens. So where there's been particularly high obesity rates, it tries to identify where there's potential opportunities to get more people out walking.
What are the most successful city projects that have been implemented for pedestrians in the past few years?
Well, I'd say in the Safe Routes to School realm, there's been a huge investment in, we work directly with the Seattle Department of Transportation, and because they have a dedicated staff person that we're working with, I think that there's been a large emphasis on making sure that it's easier for kids to get to school, and we're definitely seeing improvements in that area. We do a lot of walking audits within our schools. And so within that, that helps us work with the city to kind of map out what improvements need to happen. So that's been really successful. I think there's also been kind of infiltrating across the different departments, really kind of looking at how we can make sure that SPU and Department of Transportation and even the Parks Department, how they can actually work better together. I think we're seeing some changes. I think there's definitely room for improvement in those particular areas.
What's being done for pedestrian safety in Seattle?
So there's been a lot of campaigns. We know that there's pockets of areas that have a higher concentration of serious injuries and also deaths in particular areas. And, you know, where there's larger numbers of people, it might be skewed or it might look like it's a dangerous area. Downtown, when you look on a map, there's a higher concentration of pedestrian injuries, serious injuries and deaths, but that we also have a lot more people in those areas. But I think campaigns raising awareness, there was a campaign done a couple of years ago by the city that looked at what were the age range of the types of people that were actually being injured or killed, and really focusing and targeting that concentration or focusing in on those efforts. And, you know, looking at when these types of collisions are happening, so the time of day, and looking at how do we educate all users. So it's not just the pedestrian, but it's also the drivers, the cyclists, the people who are using the bus, so that we can make sure that everyone's working together.
You've been alluding to this, but in your opinion, what is most lacking for pedestrians in the city of Seattle?
Well, I would say definitely having more of them out there and just that education. There's also what we look at is the ease. So we have education, encouragement, the engineering piece of it, which I mentioned with the infrastructure. And then there's also the enforcement issue. And enforcement can come in the place of making sure that cars are going the speed limit, but it also making sure that pedestrians are actually following the laws as well. Because, you know, if you have your earbuds in or you're not paying attention or you're texting while you're walking across a crosswalk, you're a vulnerable user and you're putting yourself in huge jeopardy of being hit by a car.
You mentioned the pedestrian master plan earlier. How much has actually been accomplished within the context of the plan, and how much funding has there been for it?
You know, that's a great question. So we're currently analyzing that. We're kind of looking at that right now. And we've had a conversation with the Department of Transportation. They actually are tracking their tiered one projects and tiered two projects. So I don't have an actual number of projects that they specifically have done, but they are using their criteria as the model of which projects are actually planning on funding, and then making sure that pet projects don't come out of that, so that we're all looking at this as a unified city and really trying to make a difference across the city.
What do you think is most needed in terms of city policies to help pedestrians, policies that aren't yet in place?
I would say I think that a lot of what we're doing is retrofitting the problem. And so I think having a better system in place that we put people first. And when we look at complete streets, which means that all modes are being accommodated, that is a policy that the city of Seattle has adopted. But currently, complete streets is not being applied to new development. So new developers are not necessarily having to take into account the criteria for complete streets. So I think that's a policy shift that could be addressed, as well as just making sure when we're designing places, we're putting people first in all of the designs. We're not thinking about it afterwards. I think a lot of times when we're looking at feet first or people first, we're thinking, oh, that's an easy mode. Of course, that will happen. But if we don't actually make it happen in the beginning, it will definitely not happen. And it becomes a more costly retrofit in the end.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Lisa Quinn, Executive Director of Feet First. Our topic is public policies for pedestrians at the local, state, and federal level, and key projects of Feet First. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What policies are in place to help pedestrians at the state level?
So at the state level, we also have a complete streets policy. Unfortunately, we don't have funding for it. So it's set up that cities that create complete street policies and pass resolutions to do so, when funding becomes available for complete streets, they will be eligible. These cities will be eligible to apply for those funds. And so that's a great model. We also have a new Secretary of Transportation, Lynn Peterson, and she has been really instrumental in looking at a conversation that really involves all modes and really looking at how do we make sure that all the types of users are actually working together. So, you know, whether that means moving goods and freight and people, but really putting people first, I think that's a priority in her administration.
What state funding is available for pedestrian projects?
So there is state funding as it relates to Safe Routes to School, and those grants will be available come the spring. And then there's also some limited funding when it comes to transportation alternative grants.
A transportation package for Washington State failed to pass in the regular 2013 Washington State legislative session. but is still being considered, with the possibility of a special session being called if the House and Senate can agree on a plan. What are the key elements of the proposed Senate transportation package currently under consideration, and to what extent does it include pedestrians?
So that's a great question. So on the statewide level, this is a $12 billion transportation package. And as you mentioned, they're currently in negotiations right now in the Senate and the House. So what it looks like is the Senate is split on how much we should fund for transportation. So the Senate is looking at 92% of that $12 billion for roads. And this would include about 8.5% for maintenance and preservation. And then 6% would go to local government. And it would have a flexible account for any needs, including walk, bike, or transit. And then 2% has been set aside for walk, bike, and transit. And then the House proposal is a little bit different. It's likely around 94% for roads, and then 6% for walk, bike, and transit. And then in comparison to transportation authorizations, there's about 80% for roads and 20% walk, bike, and transit on the federal level. So you can see there's a bit of a difference. And what we're really asking for is that instead of 6% or 2%, really we need to have 20% of our funding going for walking, biking, and taking the bus. You know, studies are showing that more people want to have more choices. Folks are aging and they want to age in place. And we have a lot more younger people that are choosing not to want to drive. And so I think giving people those choices is a really important thing to do.
How much receptivity does there seem to be in the legislature for this change in funding?
This week, it doesn't look really promising. So I think they're at kind of a standstill. They're still negotiating. So hopefully there'll be some positive outbreak next week. But as it stands now, it is not looking very promising.
Looking at state policies overall, what are your recommendations for policy changes at the state level to help pedestrians?
I think safety is a huge concern. We're finding that in the last 10 years, there were 672 people that were killed in Washington during this period. And so this represents about 12% out of 5,608 traffic deaths in Washington during the same period of time. And so the total deaths of decline over that time, but pedestrians have actually increased as the number of people that are being killed. And so little progress has been made in this area. So within that, the state has a target zero, which means that by 2030, the Washington Traffic Safety Commission is looking at reducing serious injuries and deaths by 2030. So they've elevated pedestrians from tier 3 and moving them up to tier 2. So that's a really good movement in that direction, identifying that this is a big concern. So I would say definitely safety. I'd also say that there's an equity issue across the state. When you look at the same number of people that are being killed, you'll note that it's racially and ethnic minorities are disproportionately represented among Washington's pedestrian fatalities. So during that same period, 2002 through 2010, Black and African Americans suffered an age-adjusted pedestrian fatality that was 74% higher. So what that means is we have about 4% of our population in Washington are African Americans, but more than 5% of pedestrian fatalities were African Americans. So there's clearly a disparity among the population, the African American, and how many people are killed within this ethnic group. So really looking at why is this happening, the areas that this is happening, and really honing in on those particular solutions so we can fix the problem.
What are the priorities of Feet First for the 2014 Washington State legislative session?
So kind of on the vein of safety, we have a bill that we're looking to put into session in 2014. Right now, how it stands in our code and our statute is that pedestrians on the roadway need to clearly remove themselves from the roadway and yield to cars. We're the only state actually in the nation that has this law. Wisconsin and New York, they used to have it, but they've now changed it to put the priority and have cars yield to people. And I know it sounds like a little thing, but I think it'll go a long way to really make a statement to say that people do come first. and that you shouldn't necessarily have to remove yourself completely from the roadway into a ditch, that cars should actually move away from people and make sure that that vulnerable user is not put into jeopardy. So that's one of the bills we're looking at. We're also looking at trying to increase the amount of funding for Safe Routes to School. There's huge demand for the projects, but the supply as far as funding is not connected to the demand. And we're noticing that it's a very successful project and program. So we want to see more money given for access for Safe Routes to School.
To what extent are policies in place to help pedestrians at the federal level?
So at the federal level, I mentioned that there is a nationwide level where Congress enacted a surface transportation law known as Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century. It's also referred to as MAP 21. And so this goes through September of next year of 2014. And a great place to start for more details is Transportation for America's website. But I think that the main change in walking, in our perspective, is the former transportation bill made walking and biking safer and more convenient through three main programs: transportation enhancement, safe routes to school, and recreational trails. And so under the old law, it required to spend 1.5% of their total transportation funds on states, that is, on transportation enhancements. So right now with MAP 21, it now consolidates these three programs into the new transportation alternatives. And instead of a state requirement to spend it on these funds, applicants will compete for grants to fund biking, walking, and transit. So instead of having a set aside money, we actually now are all in the same pool. And so depending on the state you're living in, that could be a huge challenge. Now, Washington, as I mentioned, we have a really progressive Secretary of Transportation. I think that more people are looking at this. So our state might fare better than other states across the nation, but we still have to take into account that we're now part of a larger pool instead of having a set aside.
Would you now tell us about the Federal Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Act, which was recently put forward? Why is there a need for this legislation?
So the legislation that you're referring to is House Bill 3494 and Senate Bill 1708. And this requires the U.S. Department of Transportation and the state DOTs to account for and work to reduce bicycle and pedestrian deaths. And so, as I mentioned, you know, in Washington, we have a huge concern as far as the number of deaths. But nationwide, we also are concerned. Walking and biking fatalities represent 16.3% of all traffic deaths. And the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration confirmed that the total of 5,469 people were killed this year. So among those killed actually just this year is Joy Covey, who actually helped catapult Amazon, which is just down the street from your station. And so really, these are our friends. These are the people that live within our community. They can contribute to our community. They're not just a number. They're actual people. And when they, you know, die or in a serious injury, their lives are affected. All of our lives are affected. So really looking at how do we make sure that new legislation would support this. And so what this does is it would institute a non-motorized safety performance measure into the U.S. DOT and federal administration. And so currently they have refused to set aside a performance measure to reduce pedestrian and bicycle deaths. So we really want to see a performance measure take place so that we can actually make sure that the things we're doing and we can evaluate to make sure that they're actually having some effect on change of behavior and we can reduce these deaths.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn and my guest is Lisa Quinn, Executive Director of Feet First. Our topic is public policies for pedestrians at the local, state, and federal level and key projects of Feet First. Let's now go into more detail about Feet First projects. Would you tell us about the Sound Access for All campaign?
Sure. So Sound Access for All, we're very fortunate to have received a grant from the Bullitt Foundation last year. And so that allowed us to really launch our Sound Access for All. And so we're building on our success we had at the Northgate Transit Center last year, where we made sure that Sound Transit would ensure to set aside a match of $5 million to match, well, $10 million, and then $10 million from the City of Seattle. And what that match does is it sets aside money for pedestrian and bicycle access to the Northgate station. It also puts money towards a pedestrian bicycle bridge that would connect from the Northgate Transit station over to the Northgate Community College. So this would be a great win if the bridge actually takes place. So we're working with the city to make sure that we get the grant money. And then within that, we're looking at other stations. So what we really want to see is policies that go region-wide. Instead of going case by case at each of the different stations, we really want to make sure that Sound Transit is investing and putting people first and looking at the walk shed around the community that they're serving before just building a huge park and ride in the neighborhood. That is really what you're doing, is you're just causing a huge traffic coming into those particular areas that we really are serving the people that live in the areas. And of course, there might be times where you might have to have some park and ride to facilitate and accommodate people driving there. But really, we should be looking at more efficient ways of getting people there by bus, biking, or walking to these different stations. And so we've targeted four different locations, so Northgate being one that we'll kind of stay apprised of and make sure that that grant funding actually gets secured. We're also looking at the Angle Lake station, the hospital station, and then the Overlake station. So within that, what we do is we'll be creating walk and talks and looking to our community partners within each of those stations, as well as Sound Transit, to bring together community people that live, work, or play to come out and look at what the station design looks like, how there might be access to the station, and really have people weigh in on the conversation. So people are actually, for an hour, will be out walking, and then we end with a reception where there can be a longer conversation about what can actually happen in these particular areas. And then looking at access policies, and the access policies not just for parking to the station, but real legitimate, wholehearted efforts to look at access for people walking there. So that might mean that there needs to be better lighting, there needs to be better wayfinding, there needs to be better connections to the existing transit. So those are things that we're working on developing. So currently we're in the research side of things to just look at across the nation and actually across the world what other places are doing as far as policies and how they're being effective, and then using those and applying those to our Sound Access for All campaign. So we're really excited about that, and we'll be rolling that out more wholeheartedly in the coming year. And then our second project is, and we just finished up, that we're looking for a new community to serve, is our Street Stories project. And our Street Stories project is very innovative. It was designed to merge storytelling technology and neighborhood culture to creatively engage youth in understanding how a place for all people to walk contributes to the health and safety and vibrancy of the community. So our last project that we just ended was in Beacon Hill. And within that, we worked with 10 youth there, and we taught them video skills. So at the end of their time with us, it was a 5-week session, 5 weeks, 10 sessions. They actually created their own videos about Beacon Hill. And then we showed those at a large outdoor movie in August. And we're now in the process of looking at the curriculum that worked, refining that, and then rolling it out a new Street Stories project come in 2014. So we're looking forward to that. It's been really exciting working with youth and getting their perspective. I think as we move forward and different cities are looking at updating their comprehensive plans, really looking to that youth voice that seems to be missing in a lot of the conversations, I think Street Stories can play a huge role in that conversation.
Did you see the youth changing their attitude toward walking during the course of the project?
Yeah, it was really funny. So one of the sessions I actually facilitated was taking them out on a walking audit. And some of the kids had never even stepped outside the community center. I think they're dropped off, they go by bus, they get there, and they kind of just hang out there. So actually getting them out in the neighborhood, we actually had them play to kind of build on characters. We had each of the students identify themselves with a lanyard of a different character. So one student might have gotten a lanyard that said that he was blind. Another person, she might have gotten that she was in a wheelchair. And someone was a local business person. Someone was a parent. And it allowed them to really get a different perspective on what it was to walk in the neighborhood, what conditions you need to have for being able to walk. So if you're in a wheelchair and you don't have curb cuts, it makes it really challenging to get around by walking. So I think when we were able to take a step back to hear their conversations just among each other was just really exciting. And I'm proud of that project. I'm really proud of the students that were a part of it.
Where does Feet First plan to focus its efforts over the next year or two?
We'll continue with our Safe Routes to School project. We'll look again to our Sound Access for All and continue to build up the street stories. We also are focusing a lot of our energy on our Neighborhood Walking Ambassador program. So in February, we'll launch our second annual Stairway Walks Day on February 8th. And so we're really focused on building a more people power movement, getting more of people involved and becoming members. So a lot of our signature events, like our Stairway Walks, our Jane's Walk that happens the first weekend in May, are really popular. They actually sell out. They're not, we have a suggested donation, but pretty much all of them max out. So we're looking at increasing the value of our walks and training more neighborhood walking ambassadors and really having a larger reach. We have been focused a lot in Seattle and a lot of our efforts been here, but we are a statewide organization. So figuring out ways where we can build our capacity, creating Friends of Feet First and other parts of the state. And then I guess the last thing I'll add, it's really exciting, is we are introducing a Walkable Washingtons. And it's a project that it's looking to recognize and support cities across the state. So right now we're developing 24 case studies that we'll be highlighting and showcasing at a symposium on April 3rd. And we are encouraging community groups, leaders, city leaders, planners across the state to be a part of this. The two tracks we have are community engagement and safe routes for all, so getting people to different places. And then we have a keynote speaker, Chuck Wolf, who will be leading the conversation about urbanism and making it easy for people to apply this to their own cities. And then we'll also end with an award ceremony and looking at particular projects across the state that have been really successful. But Paul, part of this is really being a convener of sharing information with other communities about the successes so that we don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel every time. But we also wanted to have a great cross-section. So we have very, very small cities that we're looking at case studies to large cities like Seattle or Bellevue or Kirkland and what they're doing. So I think everyone can take part in it and everyone can get something from it and incorporate walking into their city and make it easier for people to get around by foot.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'd love for people to go out and explore their neighborhood. I think you can see a lot more things going a lot slower, and you just get a different sense of place. And also take a look at our website. It's feetfirst.org, and support what we're doing and put people first.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Diane.
You are just listening to Lisa Quinn, Executive Director of Feet First. For more information, check on the web at feetfirst.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.